Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of Tech Stack. Today, we're going to recap some of the most impactful stories from 2025. Coming up next. Welcome back to the Tech Stack, everybody. I am Marco Cipetta from Hot Tech Vision and Analysis, and I am here with my compatriots, Jim McGregor and Francis Sadeko from Tyrius Research. And Damian McGregor is in the background turning the knobs and dials, and also Mark Vina from Smart Tech Research. Everybody, how you doing?
Good.
Great.
Happy holidays.
It's coming. Nice. We're almost time to get a couple days off. It's almost here.
But Santa Claus is coming to town.
Didn't it just turn 2025 like last month?
You know, as I get older, it's amazing how fast the years go by. It's so true how quickly the years go by, man. And, you know, guys like us, where we're constantly looking to deadlines or future events, it's just the calendar just goes by way too fast.
Especially when you're in a metal tube in the sky for 70% of the time.
Yeah. Which, and I assume everybody here, CES next week, we're all
absolutely.
There we go.
So we're gonna have all of the technologists' boots on the ground at CES. But before that happens, we wanted to talk about some of the most impactful events from this year and how we think it's going to impact various markets moving forward. I think let's start with Mark. Looking back on 2025, what do you see as one of the more impactful events, and how did it play out in your eyes?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I really think Apple eating humble pie at the beginning of, well, actually in the middle of 2025, which you knew they were going to have to do, and that they kind of really, they didn't miss the boat on AI because they announced a lot of AI stuff back in the middle of 2024, but they didn't execute well on them. And they pretty much did a mea culpa at WWDC back in July of this year, where they pretty much came on stage and said, "We're sorry, you know, not all the features kind of came to pass." So they've made progress. I wouldn't say Apple is now at the forefront of implementing AI capability. They've now kind of implemented some of the features they promised over a year ago. But I think the biggest deal was that, you know, the most prominent technology player from a consumer standpoint with their iPhones and MacBooks, you know, its users probably were left in the dust a bit and probably came away with a bit of disappointment that Apple couldn't execute. And of course, I really think that Apple is certainly doubling down on its capabilities in the AI area next year, July 2026, WWDC, when they announce all the new revisions of their new software. There certainly will be probably a lot more incremental capability on AI that announced. But I think the big story was that, you know, big vaunted Apple with all the resources and all the promise that I think Apple, you know, offers to people, because Apple is a trusted brand. We know that people have, there are some users out there that are still a bit concerned about AI from a privacy standpoint, from a security standpoint, that whole Terminator type of reputation that AI has some with people. You know, Apple was seen kind of as they're the really safe brand. If they're implementing it, you know, you must be able to trust them. And I think it was a bit of a disappointment that they didn't come through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, it's interesting that they turned to Google for help, because Google kind of has the opposite reputation. You know, Apple has this sort of reputation for privacy, and Google has a reputation for harvesting every bit of data it possibly can. So how the two companies balance that out, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in 2026. Let's go to you, Francis. What do you think went on in 2025 that's going to have sort of broad-reaching impact?
So I'm going to cheat a little bit, because I know I was going to talk about one thing, but I just thought of a second thing that I actually think is really going to be setting the stage for us for a few more years. But the first thing was on-device AI. There wasn't really a specific moment in 2025, but it was kind of a long throughout the year, where prior to 2025, many of the top AI companies had really focused on AI via the data center. There's only really one company, and that was Qualcomm, who's been preaching on-device AI since 2022, 2023. Actually, 2023. But this year, everybody started really talking about on-device AI and the importance of that. And we saw that, I think it was like last week, where there was the power outage in California and all the Waymo cars came down. And it's because they don't have on-device AI. Thanks, Mark, for letting me know about that. You know, so having on-device AI, especially as AI keeps putting pressure on the power grid for data centers, and being able to share that load both from a power and processing standpoint, I think was a seminal moment this year. And you're going to see next year moving forward, we'll talk about potential predictions as well at some point. But I think that was very impactful for the future. The second thing that I did want to just quickly mention is quantum. And the moment I'm thinking about is when Microsoft came out with, you know, with the qubit type that they were working on. And in and of itself, they're still a fair ways away from developing something that really can start processing quantum workloads. But what it did was really kick off kind of a quantum PR war. IBM's been doing this for years. They're well into their technology roadmap and how it how they're progressing with that. But the moment Microsoft really got in there, all of a sudden things really accelerated, and we're starting to see a lot more conversations around quantum computing moving forward.
Yeah, quantum computing, Pat Gelsinger just a few weeks ago thinks that the quantum computing sort of inflection point is going to disrupt the AI market. And obviously, you know, the security implications across legacy platforms are going to be completely wild. We'll see what happens in that regard. You know, lots of folks working on post-quantum encryption right now to sort of head that off at the pass. But yeah, quantum computing is going to be it's going to be a huge disruptor. I'm on the same page. I lost my audio. I can't hear Francis. Is it me?
Oh, sorry. Speaking of on-device AI, my house is going crazy right now with giving me status notifications. So sorry about that.
It's all good. You're a popular guy getting all your Christmas packages. All good. All good. So Jim, what do you think? What do you think is one of those stories that everybody has to, you know, fully digest to appreciate in 2025?
Well, it's funny because, you know, we have to think about AI because, I mean, it really started, 2025 started with the DeepSeek shock moment where all of a sudden, you know, you could train a large model on fewer GPUs and blah, blah, blah. And it freaked everyone out. And the whole AI race and data center race really began. So, I mean, it was really a watershed moment for data centers this year. You know, understanding what it takes to build a data center, and more importantly, how long it takes to build a data center. I mean, it's kind of like building a fab. You know, it takes several years, and that's really pushing because of the power, the water, the building construction, not to mention the integration of all the parts. So, I mean, that's really driving a huge change, and you know, especially by some of the startups with these neo cloud providers. You know, saying, listen, there has to be a quicker way. There has to be a better way to build these AI data centers and AI factories. And really, where I think it's going is towards modularization, you know, pushing towards having power pods and IT pods and all these different pieces you can just assemble together quickly. So it's pushing the data center into a factory manufacturing mode, kind of like what we saw with cars back in the early 1900s, you know, if you actually build these things in a factory and then ship them on site, you can actually get these things up and running in, you know, 6-9 months rather than waiting 2 or 3 years. So I think it was a watershed moment for understanding what it takes to build data centers, especially these mega data centers, and, you know, and what we need to change in the industry to actually get more capacity out there to support, you know, AI and even future solutions like quantum computing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, while we're on that subject, because that's a good segue to where I'm going to go. But the power question, I'm going to go to all three of you. How do you see the power grid sort of being upgraded, and how do you see that playing out in this country? Because we know, like, China has roughly 2x the energy capacity of the US. But they're, you know, comfortable with coal, nuclear, solar. They're kind of doing everything. How do you think it's going to play out here? How are we going to expand that capacity and manage all of the growth that's expected over the next few years?
Well, one of the misconceptions here is that it has to be a grid solution. And I think that was one of the biggest misconceptions about, you know, power in the US or the Western world anyway. You know, when you think of even like renewable energy, it was never really intended to be a grid solution. You know, I like it when people say, oh, we can take 10% of the land in Nevada, put solar arrays on it and power every home in America. It's like, no, you can't. You don't know anything about line losses if you're actually saying that. So, you know, it was always intended to be a local solution. And I think that's really the solution that we're looking for data centers. As a matter of fact, one of the issues that came up this year was, you know, a data center is built to certain specifications. So you expect the power budget to be within this, but then you have these peak loads, it extends it to this. Well, there's a problem there because all of a sudden you start causing brownouts on the grid that you're tied to. So a lot of the newer data centers that we're seeing right now are going to using multiple solutions. So they're using, we're going to see SMRs in the future, but right now they're using gas generators, natural gas generators, diesel generators, stuff like that, augmenting with solar and wind energy. So you're seeing a data center not just use the grid, but also use multiple localized solutions that are helping augment that power grid. And I think we're going to see much more of that going forward. And like I said, this was always the intent. The grid was supposed to be the backup. It wasn't supposed to be the main power source when you go back historically. And I think because of the demands that we're seeing, people are starting to realize that. And especially for data center buildouts, and even as we look at new fab buildouts and everything else, people are looking at how do they use multiple energy sources effectively rather than just relying on the grid.
But I think managing that is a supply and demand thing, right? So Jim's talking about increasing the supply and how we manage that. The other part is demand, and that goes towards what I was saying about the importance of on-device AI. You got to be able to share that load. That's not going to reduce the load to the point where we can maintain the current supply. Jim's completely right. We have to increase our supply, but hopefully we can slow down how much we need to increase it by being able to share the load, both processing and power wise.
Absolutely. Yeah, Mark, looks like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I would just jump in and say a couple of things. And first and foremost, this migration, not even a migration, this kind of gold rush that's happened with the creation of data centers has really neutered the whole Green New Deal stuff. Not to turn this into a whole political conversation, but I will make a comment about it, and that it has really tamped down in many cases, extreme outputs of the Green New Deal, or the green, I wouldn't say Green New Deal, the green solutions in terms of being a very viable alternative to power these data centers. And that has really gone away. I mean, you just don't hear a lot about it because I think the majority of the population now, I think, understands that you cannot properly power an AI data center, and to Jim's point, with only a green solution, whether it's solar panels or wind or whatever you want to call it. The political winds have changed dramatically. They may again change 4 years from now if there's a new administration, but for the time being, I think there's been this huge switch in modification behavior. And one other comment I would make is I was with a friend in Scottsdale last week who was a president of a very prominent oil company and has been in the oil industry for years. And one of the fascinating conversations we had, he says, you know, it doesn't get as much attention as it should. And I know you guys are aware of it, is that there's now much stronger level interest in micro nuclear reactors, not the full-blown nuclear reactors that we see that are still operating in the United States, but this notion of less expensive, smaller micro nuclear reactors that could power just a data center, for that matter. I think that's going to be an ongoing trend. I think Microsoft now, I think if I'm not mistaken, you guys will correct me, but I think, are they looking at the old Three Mile Island
Well, that's not a small, that's not an SMR, small modular reactor.
Yeah, that would not be.
But they are repowering the Three Mile Island. They actually purchased that and they're repowering it. But you're right. There's a lot of research in it. The biggest hurdle right now is regulatory approval.
Yes, the regulatory components. Yes. Absolutely.
Well, we could just park our you know, aircraft carriers next to the dock and hook it up to the grid. That's what happens in San Diego, to be honest with you, when they come in. They start helping power the grid.
Okay, Mark, you got us on this power issue, but you gotta chime in here too. What's your big moment for 2025?
So I apologize for rehashing the topic from the last podcast, but I think that the current DRAM shortage, it cannot be understated how pervasive the effects are going to be across multiple markets. You know, enthusiast PC, near and dear to my heart. You know, I've been running Hot Hardware with Dave for, you know, 26 plus years at this point. And the enthusiast DIY PC space is going to be absolutely decimated by this DRAM shortage. You know, on top of the price increases coming to DDR4 memory and DDR5 memory specifically, we have NVIDIA reportedly reducing output of their graphics cards. So we already had the last few years where the DIY PC space kind of got beat up. I think that's going to just get much, much worse in the next few months and perhaps through to 2027 if the current shortage predictions hold true. And I also think it's going to drastically lengthen upgrade cycles in the enterprise. You know, typically you see some large enterprises upgrading maybe on a 3 or 4 year cadence to keep the fleet up to date. That's just not going to happen if, you know, next-gen PCs have half the RAM to keep the prices approachable, half the RAM and storage, you know, NAND prices going up as well. So I'm really sort of disheartened by this DRAM shortage, which was triggered by these, you know, massive data centers that Jim was speaking about, and their sort of insatiable, not the data center demand, but the accelerator demand for high bandwidth memory, which is also, you know, high margin leading edge product. And the memory manufacturers are shifting capacity to those newer memory chips, which, you know, it's they can only build so many dies per month. And if they're not making the DDR4 and DDR5 in the same amounts, it's just going to have broad reaching impacts from everything from cell phones to PCs. Any electronic device that has memory in it is either going to get more scarce or more expensive. And I think that impact just cannot be understated. It's such a problem right now.
And to Francis's point about on-device AI, you know, we're doing AI PCs, AI smartphones, AI everything. It's going to really be hard with limited memory capacity.
That's actually, you just stole my thunder. That's really the key point. No, that really is the key point, right? Because you have everybody talking about, whether it's happening or not, everybody's talking about hybrid AI. We actually did a few white papers for a Semicon client on how AI can impact workflows for certain personas on the PC. And even today with on-device AI, the impact on your workflow and the time savings, even at this early stage, is very significant. And if you have, let's say PC, like in my opinion, 32 gigs of RAM, sort of the minimum spec for today to ensure some, you know, future proofing of a platform. If that gets cut in half because 16 gigs of RAM is adding $400 or $500 to the price of a PC, what does that do to those local AI workloads? They have to go to smaller and smaller models. And, you know, we don't want to go backwards in this space. We want to move forward and we want to see this stuff progress. And not having memory on the platforms that run these apps is a huge problem.
Yeah, well, a couple quick things on that. One is completely agree with you guys. It's kind of actually interesting that when I was talking about everybody was starting to talk about on-device AI when they had it before and it was only Qualcomm, those are all the SoC suppliers that are talking about that. And it's interesting that there seems to be a little bit of a lag between what the SoC guys are doing versus what the memory guys are doing. So it'll be interesting to see how the memory guys like Micron and Samsung and so forth, you know, adjust to this. But Marco, to your point, with the memory and the model sizes, you know, obviously we're going to need all of this memory, right? But the one thing that could potentially offset this is there has been a lot of work done in, you know, the the 20 billion parameter model of today was is probably just as capable as the 120 billion parameter model of a year or two ago, right? So the good thing is there is that kind of evolution that's happening in the model space, and we're getting better and more refined with maintaining capability or even improving capability with smaller and smaller models. That being said, there is still an insatiable demand for memory, both on the data center side and on device side.
Yeah, I would say to basically every client over the years, you know, outside of hot tech and hot hardware, you can never have enough memory or storage, right? And those are it's true today. It's as true as ever.
You can never overdo it. Might be a good year for people like Micron.
Well, you would think, you know, they left the consumer space, so obviously that wasn't making enough money for them. So I have a feeling though, in the next 3 to 4 years, they'll come back to that space. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, I think Micron's going to regret that, frankly.
The outcry on social media was so negative. I wouldn't be surprised if they revisit that sooner rather
than later. You know, it's so not to, to dwell on that, but Crucial had such a great, you know, they had a performance reputation. And you're right. I mean, when I would recommend upgrades to people, Crucial's the brand you want to go with, you know, and it's a shame.
Two other SSDs in my PC right now, the best SSDs out there. They're awesome.
And like we mentioned last week, you know, we tend to talk about smartphones and PCs and all these things, but, you know, those are hundreds of millions. We're talking about billions of other devices that rely on those older memory generations, especially DDR4. That have seen prices, you know, go up 2x, 4x, and now even more, to the point where a lot of these companies are canceling their orders just because the spot pricing has gotten too high.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really dire. So we'll see what happens. But let's go on.
That's your car. That's your electric toothbrush. That's everything. So yeah,
absolutely. So something potentially more upbeat, but maybe it's more dire. Let's talk about predictions for 2026. I'm going to start with Francis. Nothing set in stone. Give me a prediction for something impactful you think's going to happen in 2026, positive, negative, whatever. There's no limits here.
It could be a prediction or it could just be something I'm looking forward to, but I think it's two things. One is on the quantum side, I'm really looking forward to seeing if we will, I think we will, based on the roadmaps that I'm seeing and so forth, we will continue to see more and more practically viable quantum computing capabilities and the use cases that go along with it. It's not going to be like where AI is now. Quantum's still a few years away, but I think we're going to continue moving down that path. And on device side, I think it's not just on device, but it's physical AI and that transition, which also includes more agentic capability. But having the AI starting to really interact with the physical world and vice versa. So that's not just robotics. I mean, auto is really, a form of physical AI as well. So I think there's going to be a lot that's going to happen in that space.
Absolutely. I'm totally agreed. How about you, Mark? What do you see happening next year?
My big prediction probably will occur the latter part of 2026 is Apple will finally announce a foldable product. And in the spirit of a rising tide affects all boats, the smartphone foldable market, which Samsung has been a major player in, secretly they are praying for Apple to get into the business because obviously when Apple gets into that space, they'll validate it. There's some rumors that Apple has fix the crease problem, even though it's gotten a lot less, but Samsung's done a pretty nice job with increasing it. But my prediction is Apple will revitalize the smartphone space where you might see some much higher growth with foldable phones. They'll introduce a lot of interesting usage models that maybe Samsung hasn't been able to implement because Apple's more of a closed ecosystem type of play. On the flip side, I think you will see premium pricing for these foldable smartphones from Apple that we've never seen before. And if you layer all the memory pricing increases on top of it, you'll probably have a smartphone from Apple for north of $3,000. So that's kind of where I think
you know, Apple has an advantage though, because iOS typically doesn't have the memory requirements of Android and the more diverse Android ecosystem. So not only does Apple have, you know, their market muscle to negotiate lower memory prices, their devices need less memory. So
they have an architecture
really
advantage, yeah.
Could really be interesting.
On the RAM side, but their non-volatile memory is, you know, I mean, obviously they pass that cost along to the consumers with the tiered pricing, but
guys. All you have to do is have the fanboys like Francis. And they'll buy the Apple products.
It's less about being a fanboy, as their marketing team did a really good job of locking us into the ecosystem 10 years ago, and now I can't move because all my content is on.
Well, and before we switch over here to Jim, I mean, my big thing with Apple and is that it's exactly that. Even before all these pricing shortages, because their products, especially their notebooks, are designed not to be upgraded by the end user. You know, unless you want to do something crazy and go on YouTube and pull videos out where it shows people how to, you know, to disassemble their MacBook and void their warranty. You have to make that purchase decision when you order that MacBook, and they charge a nice hefty premium when you go from, let's say, 1 terabyte to 2 terabyte or even greater for guys like me who do a lot of video work. So I'm scared, you know, frankly, when they come out with their new MacBook Pros, especially next year when they announce their new M5 MacBook Pros, and God knows we're going to see crazy pricing.
Yeah. I will say Apple has done a phenomenal job with their marketing lately. There was a couple of ads I saw recently that literally give me emotional responses. And that's hard to do for a jaded tech guy. But man, they're killing it in the marketing department, to be perfectly honest.
They are.
I'm going to let Jim wrap up, but I'll go next. I think 2026, as big as NVIDIA already is, I think NVIDIA enters into a totally new space. And we start to see NVIDIA-powered devices, not just stuff like the GB10, but perhaps notebooks or small workstations or even larger workstations with some of their more powerful Grace Blackwell platforms. I think NVIDIA is going to make a splash there. And again, because of their market dominance and their position, yes, these will be premium products, but I think that with everybody else's price premiums, they're not going to be as far out of reach as people expect. And I think that's going to shake things up quite a bit.
I kind of agree with you. I think that there's going to be, you know, a redefinition of what personal computing is. And I think we've already seen that with the Strix Halo and the DGX Spark. So I agree. I think that's going to be key.
Yeah, there's going to be a wild ride in 2026. All right, Jim, how about you? What's happening in 2026? Everyone's got to watch out for
robotics, and the rise of autonomous machines. Going into 2025, I said 2025 was going to be the year robotics, and it really has been, even though it's been overshadowed with everything else that we've talked about on this episode. It really, with agentic AI, with the capabilities and some of these embedded platforms and everything else, and a lot of the focus on models. I mean, NVIDIA, especially being one of the key companies out there focusing on robotics for over a decade now, you know, to be able to enable this. Now, a lot of the focus was on, you know, going from those manufacturing robots to humanoids. Let's face it, there's a big gap in between. Matter of fact, I like the fact that Infineon, during their company event, focused on just power consumption. They said, listen, if you put wheels on a humanoid robot rather than legs, you get 60% improvement in battery performance. So, you know, we set the stage, I think, in 2025, really for physical AI and robotics, being able to have all these different machines be able to interact with humans, be able to safely and be able to do things autonomously. And I think we're going to see I think 2026 becomes that moment where the rest of the industry really coalesces and focuses on robotics. And we really see that innovation come to fruition and start seeing deployments in areas that we didn't even think about before. I mean, even today, when we think about robotics, a vast majority of surgeries are done for joint replacements and stuff. That cutting is actually done by robots. You know, obviously we have manufacturing robots, we have materials handling robots. You know, I think that, you know, we're at a point now where robotics really hits the mainstream. Now, that may not be in the home, but I think throughout any type of manufacturing or physical environment, we're going to see a huge focus on robotics in 2026.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the other interesting thing, if you put wheels on the robot, it doesn't fall down either.
That's true. So,
absolutely. Well, guys, this was fun. I appreciate the lively conversation. This will probably be the last episode of this year for everybody that's watching. We're going to try to enjoy some family time and enjoy the holidays before we all head to CES. And if you haven't been to CES, that show is absolutely insane. Hundreds of thousands of geeks in one place. It's nuts. So we will definitely need to recharge the batteries before we go there. You know,
and gentlemen, I hope we all come out of CES without getting the next wave of H1N3 or N4 or any of the other things that go through it.
Yeah, I'm not keeping my hopes up, but we'll see what happens.
Bacterial. I have a pump. Every handshake, like, I don't care. I'm washing my hands.
Yeah, I've already started the vitamin C, vitamin D load up now.
Yes.
In preparation for going out there. Absolutely. All right, guys. With that, I think we should say goodbye. Thank you, everybody, for an awesome year. One of the other watershed moments, 2025, the launch of the Technologists. We really appreciate you getting us already to over 16,000 followers, and we've only been live since, you know, mid-August. We appreciate all of the support. It's really awesome. It's only onwards and upwards in 2026. And if you enjoyed this conversation, please do us a solid and like and subscribe to the channel. Check out thetechnologist.net for more of our content from around the web. And if you'd be so kind to leave a comment on this, if you have any questions or agree or disagree with us, we want to help that YouTube algorithm. And with that, folks, we bid you adieu. Thank you so much.